working in multi-graphic type of materials, you know, children's books, you know, incorporating the Haida language. And you also have a lot of people involved with the textiles. For the most part, I try to focus on the traditional parts first, and then once they're done with me, they could go any direction they want to go. And of course, you know, there's jewelry, there's weaving, you know, so there's many different directions we can go.
Kiliata Christian White, master Haida artist, runs until February 2026 at the Bill Reid Gallery of Northwest Coast Art in Vancouver. For CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, I'm Jesse Wensloff. This report is made possible by funding from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative and is available online with other stories from across the country at frequencynews.ca. Chara by Empanadas Ilegales, from the record Sancocho Trifásico, here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Some nice psychedelic cumbia adjacent stuff. And now a report out of CICK in Smithers, British Columbia, from Dan Messick about, the upcoming surge in LNG, the LNG boom, and what that might mean about fracking and other things. So here that is.
You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, the government of BC approved the substantial start for the Prince Rupert Gas Transmission Pipeline, which, if completed, would feed fracked gas to BC's northeast to an export terminal near the mouth of the Nass River. The Cy Lisms LNG project is being billed as the first Indigenous-owned and led LNG project of its kind, along with the backing of a Texas-based gas company called Western LNG. The Nisga Nation is looking to build the newest BC LNG project. This comes on the heels of the government of BC's push to see several major industry projects move forward in the hopes of diversifying markets amid the U.S. trade war with the passing of Bill 5. However, there are already legal challenges of the LNG project and the Prince Rupert gas transmission in the courts, and more are expected to follow. There is also strong Gitxsan and non-Indigenous opposition to the pipeline, and hundreds of Nisga members have also signed petitions in opposition of the Cy Lisms export terminal. At the same moment, we are seeing intense flaring in Kitimat as LNG Canada's LNG export facility gears up to ship out its first tanker of LNG in the coming months. Although we often hear about the opposition and support for these projects here in the northwest of British Columbia, we rarely hear about where all this gas is coming from and what is going to be needed in the future to support increased production of BC's LNG industry. Today, we speak with Earth scientist David Hughes of Global Sustainable Research, who spent 32 years with the Geological Survey of Canada and has conducted extensive research into Canada's unconventional and potential gas production capacity. We spoke to him about the potential of growth in BC's LNG industry and what the potential drawbacks are within that growth. Stay with us.
There's a whole litany of new projects. I guess the Cy Lisms is one up near you. There's LNG Canada, which is underway. There's Cedar.
Yeah.
There's the Squamish one. And there's another one down south. And then there's Cy Lisms.
Yeah.
So that would be five altogether, including LNG Canada.
And so it seems like this, you know, according to the paper, how many wells are actually going to be needed to feed all of this LNG? And I remember, you know, something in the way of, you know, basically thousands, you know, tens of thousands possibly of new wells. Is that still the case? Is that kind of what, you know, according to the,
yeah, I mean,
the paper?
I had an estimate in my paper. Well, they'd be horizontal wells. So you can drill, you know, maybe 15 or 20 of them from a single well pad. So it's not quite as bad as the old days where they drilled, you know, one well per pad. So they'd have very long horizontal laterals.
I see.
You know, typically 9 or 10,000 feet per lateral is not unusual. And some of them would go longer than that. So, but you still need, you know, roads to access them. I've got an estimate of the total amount of land destroyed or affected, I think. So it really depends on what scenario. So the global net zero scenario, if you look on page 40, I've got a chart that has estimates.
Yeah.
And, yeah, global net zero is 12,500. But, when you look at what Trump is doing down south and what Ebby is talking about with this Bill 15.
Yes.
Which sounds basically like a, whole hog. Forget about climate change. Forget about global warming. So basically that the 12,500 is in the most restrictive scenario where Canada actually achieves its net zero. And it just gets worse from there. at 19,000, if Canada gets to net zero, but the world doesn't, and business as usual is 32,000. So, 12,000 is absolutely best case. And then land surface disturbance is on page 41. So I made some basic assumptions about, how many wells per pad and how much road access you need for each well. So you're looking at over 100 square kilometers in the best case scenario. Global net zero is, that's just in BC.
Yeah.
And then 130 or more in Alberta. So that the best case scenario is probably about 250 square kilometers get decimated. And it gets much worse than the other scenarios. Yeah. And, the way the world is going, the Canada net zero scenario is probably the most realistic. And, probably quite optimistic. Personally, I don't think the way things are going, especially with Trump south of the border, we're going to meet our net zero by 2050 commitments. I think that's pretty unrealistic at this point.
Obviously, a lot of this means potentially more money, more jobs, but there's a lot of other issues that come along with that. I mean, just looking at, as you mentioned, the land disturbance, is there any kind of indication what this will do to, arable land? There's obviously got to be First Nations interests and all this. But that's not the research you've looked into. You've just looked at kind of the numbers of, what is required and where this is possibly headed in these scenarios. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And if you look at, First Nations would be mostly on the BC side.
Yeah.
But they would control a lot of it.
Like a lot of the drilling.
And really the BC side has the best quality wells. They're the most productive. And it's also closer to the coast. So I would think that, a disproportionate amount of the gas would come out of the BC side. And therefore, be more subject to First Nations.
Yeah.
The Alberta side is more in the agricultural part. Although part of the BC Montney is in agricultural land too, mm-hmm. but less than Alberta.
What's the size of that deposit? How long could this, what's the estimate for how long this could go on for to see these developments?
Well, basically the Montney is the last great golden hope for Canada's gas. I'm just working on a project. I'm going through all the gas plays in North America with a commercial database. And if you look at the other plays in BC, like the Horn River or the Liard River, they're basically finished. I mean, the only real growth potential in BC is the Montney. And if you look at Alberta, it's sort of the same. I mean, a lot of those plays are quite mature. And, you know, sure, there's going to be more gas, but it doesn't last forever. This is non-renewable resource we're talking about. You know, basically, the government proposal seems to think gas is infinite. And we'll just sell it off as fast as we possibly can. And it seems that climate change was a big concern with the BC government, but not so much anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one other thing I want to ask you about there, David. You had mentioned that, you know, the production of the wells on the BC side are more efficient, that there's more production on that side. You know, with this, you know, this whole boom coming, what do you envision is going to be needed to, you know, obviously you're going to need to drill more new wells, but what do you envision is going to happen if this boom continues to that area?
There's already, I was just looking at it, something over 14,000 wells drilled on the BC side of the border in the Montney. And there's going to be a lot more wells drilled. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm just looking at, I'm in my database now, and some of the operators on the BC side of the border are like Ovintiv, Tourmaline, Petronas, Cambrian Energy, Arc Resources, Paramount, Canadian Natural Resources, and then there's a few others, but that's on the BC side of the border.
You know, David, I know you've been looking into this stuff for a long time, and you work with the Geological Survey of Canada. I mean, I'm curious to know your thoughts on, you know, we often hear this, you know, this discussion of, oh, gas is LNG, it's a transitional fuel, you know, to get us to the next phase of renewable energy, you know, just get us through this last bit. But also, you know, and I hear this more often now than before, in the clean LNG. And I wonder, you know, when you're doing this research, when you're talking to people and going through this data, and obviously seeing these areas, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Is this a clean, you know, transitional fuel that we're tapping into here, or is this just a regular old fossil fuel?
Well, at the burner tip, gas is about, you know, half the emissions of coal. But, the, you know, gas is methane, and there's a lot of leakage along the way. So if you look at the full cycle emissions, like, you know, leakage at the drill site, leakage during the pipeline process, you know, leakage throughout the whole life cycle, you know, some would say that it's worse than coal, especially LNG. You know, pipeline gas is probably better than coal. You know, if it's used locally, like, you know, the gas that we burn in Canada is probably actually making some kind of a CO2 reduction. But if you look at LNG, you know, there's one paper that was published last September. I can give you a reference to it by a fellow at Cornell. And basically, coal, you know, LNG transported across the Pacific is something like 30% worse than coal. You say, well, you know, the promoters would say, but we're replacing old, ancient coal plants that are very inefficient. Well, maybe, but if you, you know, ship it to China's coal plants are actually quite new. I mean, if you look at the amount of coal that is burned, it's just taking off like a rocket. So a lot of China's coal plants are quite efficient. You know, that argument, I don't think holds a lot of water. I mean, you know, please tell me what specific coal plant this LNG is going to displace, and nobody will tell you that. It's just sort of a meme that that people use. You know, for some things, like if you look at making steel and a lot of kind of some of the manufacturing processes, electricity is not a good match for that. You know, in terms of things that require massive amounts of heat. And so we're likely going to have to be using fossil fuels at some level, you know, for specific purposes like that, where electricity is not a good match. But, you know, selling them off as fast as possible doesn't make any sense to me, you know, especially when you consider the climate impacts of doing that.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists, I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.
Please enjoy 30 Seconds of Nature, brought to you by Ducks Unlimited Canada. Learn how you can experience nature in your community at ducks.ca.
Yeah, experience nature in your community. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Thanks to Dan Messick from CICK for that interview. And thanks to the LJI for funding local journalism across the country. Okay, here's a way that you can enjoy nature in your community, and that's by being King of the Beach. This is a throwback by Waves, King of the Beach.
Let the sun burn my eyes, let it burn my eyes.
This has been Speak Up. Thanks for hanging out with me this hour. We're going to leave with a little bit more local music. This is My Body by Ramen Fog. Democracy Now! Is up next. Stick around. Thanks.